After class yesterday, a dear friend sent us a very nice comment that I thought would be nice. Okay. This person thanked us for sharing yesterday and then said, "The right use of memory was especially helpful. I had never heard that before. This morning I was thinking that this can also apply to our imagination and the right use of it. For myself, this is important as it can be easy to imagine all sorts of outcomes, none of which usually happen. But how much more beneficial to use imagination for visualizing only the highest outcomes, imagining love, light, harmony, and joy filling people, relationships, situations. It seems this is the right use of our imaginative faculty." Beautiful comment and something to really keep in mind. I want to continue on the theme of karma, but not just what it is and why we have it, rather how we can use karmic tests ultimately for our own freedom. Because the reason that things come to us, the reason karma comes to us and tests, is primarily for our education. We're rarely entertained by our karmic tests. Ultimately, we are. Some years later, why does everybody talk about the gallbladder operation they had? And it seems like they had it last week, and it was 30 years ago, you know. And so ultimately, we are entertained by our karmic tests, but not at first. They come in order, as Devi said, to teach us. But there's a very interesting, interesting mechanism of the way the mind works. And this is what Master said. He said that our mind tries to find pleasure. So we have a desire, and a desire that is fulfilled according to our expectations creates pleasure, creates happiness for us, and we try to find that. A desire that is unfulfilled or is blocked creates sadness or pain or anger. If it's blocked for very long, then we get angry. And so those two waves alternate up and down, pleasure and pain, pleasure and pain. And remember, Master said that all of us are guided by the same thing. We're trying to find happiness and avoid pain. At first, we try to find happiness by pushing that wave of happiness higher. I'll have this desire and that desire, and why have only one car? You know, you read about, basketball stars who they get the $80 million contract, and the next thing you know, they have a garage of 73 cars. Who can drive 73 cars? But I'll be even happier if I have more and more and more and more. And it's a very typical thing. We try to push that wave higher. The inevitable result is that the trough comes down and the opposite side of the wave comes down, so that when we're disappointed, we become more unhappy. And those two are, that's an irrevocable law of nature and of karma. And so the getting caught in that cycle of pushing outwardly in order to create happiness, and the concomitant wave coming down of wanting to avoid pain, that's what causes us to act in ways that are adharmic. Now, Master said also, in between those two waves is a period of boredom. And he said that the whole world is driven by pushing waves higher for happiness, trying to avoid the downturn that comes, and then when the boredom comes, to whip up the waves again. Isn't that interesting? But if you stop and pull back, you can see it in your own self. my goodness, you try to get calm for a little while and pretty soon you're fidgeting. And Master used to have a disciple that fidgeted all the time. And he had this disciple actually had a heart problem. And Master noticed that what he was doing was his nervous energy, he would play with a button that was right near his heart. And so Master told him, don't touch that button. In fact, he even cut it off of his vest. And when that man stopped doing that, the heart problem went away. And so that nervous energy going out, it goes into our nervous system, it goes into our life, it goes into everything around us. And so this pattern of the up and down, up and down, up and down, and then if boredom comes, the recreation of the pushing it up and down, up and down, up and down, that's what we have to begin to fight against, because that movement of the waves is what makes us restless. Master also said that the waves, that wave action makes us unable to see good qualities. He said that when we begin to get the wave action calmed down, we automatically begin to feel and experience peace. And when we experience peace and can calm it even more, he said, then we see beneath the waves our own intrinsic soul bliss. And that's what we experience. But we can't experience it as long as those waves are there. I had a very interesting example of this some years ago. In fact, I see Krishnadas and Mantra Devi, and Devi and I were out. We went out canoeing. This was when up in Seattle. And we were canoeing, and then we stopped by a dock, and I had a nice pair of sunglasses that I was a little bit attached to. And they fell off and went down, and the lake was kind of obscure enough, and there were little wavelets. It was a slightly windy day. I couldn't see, and I dove down, and I tried to find them. I couldn't see. I couldn't find them. I couldn't figure out anyway. And then I remembered that if you can calm the waves, you can see beneath the surface. And so I found a piece of glass and put it on the surface, and that stopped the waves, and I could see straight down to the bottom. And there were my sunglasses. I saw where they were. I dove down and got them. But isn't it an interesting, even on the physical level, if you calm the waves of restlessness, then you can see beneath the surface. And so it is in our own consciousness. If we calm those waves, then we can see beneath the surface, and we can see then our own intuition begins to come into play. So Master talked a lot about being even-minded. He said one of the supreme qualities that we can have is to be even-minded and cheerful. So because he talked about passive peace also. And passive peace can come when you push everything away and you get so kind of discouraged and negative that nothing kind of affects you. You get kind of numb. Soldiers after a battle can sometimes experience a kind of numbness where nothing can get through to them and really affect them. But that negative peace is not what we're after, even-minded and cheerful. But achieving that is, one might say, the supreme avenue toward undoing our karma. Now, we had a beautiful, beautiful example of spiritual teaching that happened less than about 2 months ago. We had a wonderful soul here, Maria, who passed away. And she found out, she was fortunate in a way that she found out that she had inoperable brain cancer and she had a very short period to live. So she had years and years of spiritual practices, and then she had a very clear period of preparing for release from the body. But she left a legacy, first with Devarshi, her husband, but then he passed it on to all of us, and it's very, very important. He was wheeling her in, and within 5 days of the first major symptoms coming, she knew what had already happened. And he was wheeling her in because her body stopped obeying her brain. And he was wheeling her in to have some imaging done, some scans done. And he was upset, as naturally, I mean, here's one of the major, major tests of life for both of them. One of our major tests is going to be leaving the body. Everybody has to go through it, but it is a very important test for us. Swami calls it the final exam. And so that is a very major period in our life. But it's also a major period for people who are close to us, especially a spouse. And as he was wheeling her in, she could feel his kind of being upset. And she turned to him and she said, and this is something that we should really emblazon. In fact, Madhavi has created a little kind of a bookmark with it on. She said very succinctly, she said, detach yourself. Control the reactive process. Live the teachings. That was it. But that is, in summation, exactly how we undo karmic tests, karmic patterns. It's how we undo delusion. Detach yourself. Why do we create karma? Remember these waves? We have a desire or an expectation. We push in that direction. Or we have a fear and anxiety. We try to control that downward flow. And that expectation and desire keeps us from being even-minded. And so the first law of getting untied is to detach yourself. That's why when karmic tests come, Devi said, but I want to emphasize also, it is extremely important to accept those karmic tests, accept them as coming from God. How do we know whether a karmic test come from God or not? Everything comes from God. If you think it doesn't come from God, all you're doing is pushing away the lesson that you need to learn. It not only comes from God, but it is custom made to fit you. Whatever is happening is exactly what you need for your freedom. And so the first thing is to control the tendency to push it away. Now, how do we push it away? When something bad happens, how many times have you spent hours thinking about the person who's at fault here? If they hadn't acted that way, if they hadn't done that, then that wouldn't have happened, and I can't imagine how they could have done that, and of course I have to react the way that I have to react. I mean, it's all their fault. How many times have we done that? So the first thing is don't blame circumstances, don't blame people, don't blame anything, and don't blame yourself. Just accept and say, this is coming from God, and it is coming for my own freedom. And that's everything. It's little things, it's big things. One of the big egoic defense mechanisms that we have, the ego has, it's like it has a castle, and that castle has the outer wall and the inner wall and the inner wall beneath, inside of that, and then you got a moat around that castle, and then you know, we've got layers and layers of protective devices for the ego. But one of the big, big protective devices is, it's not my fault. And then when we accept mentally it's not my fault, then we can start the process of laying the blame at the proper place. And we can figure out all the people who are to blame for whatever's going on. So we have to stop that process right away, because if we don't, we can't become detached. We can't calm those waves and allow us to see what's really going on. So absolutely detach yourself. Now, detachment is beyond just blaming people. It's also not having that blaming people, kind of pushing away, is one side of the karmic coin. But the other side is wishing for things, wishing that this would happen or that would happen, or I could have this or I could have that. As long as we have that part of the wave pattern going on, it's going to create the other part. And so detachment means just accepting whatever comes and being thankful for it. Master put it beautifully. He says, with acceptance, he said, what comes of itself, let it come. And what comes of itself means that it's drawn by your karma. When it comes, let it come. Now, it's hard to rise to the point where you actually welcome bad karma. Or it isn't, as Devi said, it isn't really bad karma. If we could catch ourselves, because we get reactive. That's the next part of the formula, control the reactive process. But we get reactive, and therefore we can't see it for good karma. So you get ill, or you get, I don't know, in a car accident, and you blame the person who ran the red light and ran into you. Well, yes, somebody ran the red light and ran into your car, and maybe you got injured. Yeah, you can go there and blame that person. But if you just accept, detach from, I don't want my car to be injured, I don't want my body to be injured, just accept everything that comes, comes from God, good, bad, and indifferent. I've got something that this event is going to untangle inside myself. And if we can bring that positive reaction to it, it's the positive reaction that untangles karma. It isn't the test. The test is absolutely neutral. Absolutely neutral. It's our reaction to it that makes it a plus or minus karmically. And so those things that come to us, all they're doing is trying to get you to react. They're trying to push your button. And if your button gets pushed in a negative way, then you basically practice negativity. And if you can react in a positive way, then you basically practice untying the reactive process. And God will come along and do it to you purposely. Master, I was just reading last night when Swami and his brother disciple Norman were out in the desert with Master. And they had been digging a swimming pool. Many of you have heard this story or read it in The Path, The New Path. And so they were dug a huge hole in the ground, and they'd piled up these mounds of sand. And they were working all morning, and it was lunchtime. They were really looking forward to lunch. And they were just ready to go in when Master came out. And he said, you know, those mounds don't look very good. I wonder if we could improve their appearance a little. Go get a 2x4, long 2x4. And so I guess Norman went and got it. And he said, okay, now, Walter, you get on one end, called Swami Walter. And he said, Norman, you get on the other end and push down hard and then work it back and forth and kind of slowly move forward like this. And it was very hard work, and they did it. And sure enough, it smoothed out this mound of sand. Made it flat on the top. Master said, I thought that would work. Let's try another one. And so they did another one. He said, well, that looks so much better. And they were thinking, well, okay, proof of concept. Now let's go eat. Master said, let's try another one. And another one and another one. Swami puts it, Norman was this huge guy. Think Ananta bulked up. And so the way Swami puts it is, even Norman was kind of moaning softly after we'd gotten to about the sixth mound of sand. And Master said, let's do another one. And Swami kind of just stopped and he started laughing. And he got the thought. And Master said, yes, I was playing with you. But he was playing with them to see if they could break in the right way. And as soon as they broke in the right way, they didn't have any more mounds of sand to do. Now, isn't that a good lesson? As soon as you break in the right way from your karma, you don't have any more of that karma to untangle. Well, maybe you have some, but it doesn't come as a test anymore. So, you know, we had a big fire through here in 1976. We had, everything was taken away. If we had broken in the wrong way, we probably would have had a fire every 5 years come through and take everything away until we could break rightly and say, my happiness isn't affected by what I have or don't have. You want to bring a fire? Bring it on. And then you break in the right way, you don't have to do that. But if you don't break in the right way, what happens? You get to retake the test and retake it and retake it. Watch out for those karmic patterns, the things that happen over and over and over again, because it means that you aren't breaking in the right way. Well, how do you break in the right way? You don't always know why the karma comes. You know, if a fire comes and takes possessions away, does that mean that you were too attached to your possessions in a past life or that you weren't strong enough to fight off adversity? You know, there could be many reasons for that same activity to come. In fact, in a community, the same fire can come through and be karmically designed for 25 different tests for 25 different people. So you can't always say it's karmic patterns are very complex. You can't always say why they've come. But if they're repeating in your life, then know that that's important enough for God to spend some time working with you on it. And so that which is repeating, how do we understand? How do we see beneath the surface? You've got to calm the waves. You got to put a piece of glass down. How do you put a piece of glass down on your mind? You meditate. You do Kriya Yoga. You pray for God's grace. You pray for God's guidance. And gradually as you do that, or suddenly, it will be revealed to you why you're drawing that test over and over again. Why are people always getting angry at you? Well, there's a reason for it. You can't just say it's because I got angry in the past. There's something specific in your pattern. And as Davy said, you put the energy out in exactly the opposite way and you neutralize it. So detach yourself. Control the reactive process. Controlling the reactive process means that when somebody does something that you don't like, somebody comes up and says, why did you do that stupid thing? Can't you drive? If you swerved out of your lane, your tendency is to say, I didn't swerve out of my lane. What are you doing getting out of your car? You know, you get mad at them, and then a big argument ensues, and road rage comes up, and not here, but nothing like that would ever happen here. None of us have the negative reaction when our buttons get pushed a little bit. Doesn't happen here. But you've got to watch right at that moment when you start a negative reaction to having pressure. Right at that moment is when you catch it. And if you can catch it at that moment, you neutralize it. Better yet, if you can do the exact opposite of the energy that's coming to you that you don't like. So somebody comes up and says, is angry. There's a very, very good story that came up when early in the years when Davy and I were starting the ashram in San Francisco. We had a very fine friend named Joan Brown, and she told this story about herself. She had somebody who was a friend, and I think a financial advisor, I'm not sure, but also a friend. Anyway, she was working, and she called him up and asked him a question. And he said, "Why are you calling me at work? Can't you understand? I've got business to do. I'm working. I don't have time for this now." And he slammed the phone down. Well, Joan was a very, very fiery person. She was a force of nature. She changed politics in the Bay Area because she just wouldn't stand still for anything. She was a professor at Berkeley and a very fine artist. But she was very fiery and kind of reactive. So she immediately picked up the phone and called him back. It was busy. 2 minutes later, called him back. It was busy. 3 minutes later, called him back again. Busy again. Then she got busy. And she was working, I guess she was painting. And it was several hours later, and she remembered, oh yeah, I'm supposed to call him back. But by this time, her reactive process had time to calm down. And she began to think, that's not like him. I wonder why he reacted like that. And so she called him up, and she said, is something wrong? It was such a strange reaction from you this morning. And he started crying. And he said, I'm having a very difficult time at home and at work. And they talked for some time. But that, see how that twist? And instead of the negative reaction, the opposite reaction. Somebody is sharp with you, then you're patient and understanding with that person. That neutralizes that. Now, Joan, it's not hard to figure out that she's the type of person who would draw negative reactions. But that was her key out of everything. And she was a fine, fine person. But the key out of that pattern was to come back to the person not with anger, not with aggression, but with understanding, patience, kindness. Lahiri Mahashaya said the primary qualities we should try to develop, nonviolence, love, tenderness, and kindness. Isn't that interesting? Out of all the ones, he said further, the supreme virtue is to align our will with the will of God. And that is just enough for us to work on. So detach yourself, control the reactive process, live the teachings. Let's say it together. Detach yourself, control the reactive process, live the teachings. The teachings, as Davy said, are our practices that get us out of these patterns. So that simple, simple formula, if we can bring it to mind when we have a spiritual test, will get us to the point where we are untied from these karmic patterns that bedevil us. And when we can untie from that, as Patanjali put it, yogas chitra vritti nirodh. Yoga is the neutralization of those whirlpools of likes and dislikes or reactions. And furthermore, in that, what he's saying is, as soon as we can untie or neutralize that reactive process, union with God automatically occurs. Pretty good formula.